Brussel in Carmel, California. It's January the 12th, 1979, and this is tape number 371, side A. I don't like to usually take up time on the tape for local news because by the time it reaches the east and around the country, these events are over. But there are too many people to contact personally to keep up with some of the things that are happening here in California that I will be doing. And that I need your participation in, so the others just bear with me. And I do think it also pertains to work that you can do in your particular areas and following through with some of this research. I will be on Lynn Ryder's radio show, KXRX, in San Jose, Tuesday, January 23rd, from 7 to 10 p.m., a three-hour talk show. That's important to mention because I did several shows with Lynn Ryder, and the evening of the second show, or just before that program, she was told that her talk show was being taken away. And this has happened other times where we've done shows that have been very successful, and I have come back two or three times, and the listeners were really catching on to the kind of news that I was telling. The moderator was taken off the air. My programs were taken off with Carol Benson in Modesto and other stations where they were going very well. And because of listener participation and people that wrote the station manager and called Lynn and particularly contacted the station, I think it had some effect because Lynn called me very excited this week that her program is back on. She's got her talk show back again, and she wanted me to be the first guest on that show. And I think these letters did help. And I want to appreciate and thank those persons that wrote to her about having the talk show and having her back on and having this two-way communication. And it's important to listen to these shows and call in, and also those of you who have talk shows back east or the Larry King show, you can keep calling in and using this information and turning people on to the tapes and to the information and spread a lot of this around. That I don't feel that enough of you are doing that kind of thing, and it can be done very successfully. It doesn't take too many calls or letters to station managers to get a response. I did a two-hour show at KPFA with Mom O'Shea up in Berkeley, and I'm going back up there to do a two-hour radio show January 27th, that Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5. That's a call-in, and again, they got many calls and letters, and the station manager at KPFA in Berkeley got letters. They wanted Mae Brussel back, and Mom O'Shea is on the board of directors there, and we're going to try and work out a monthly program with an update of news. Now, that show is taped and then sent to other KPFA stations around the country in Los Angeles and Washington and in New York. So that they're put on tape and distributed around the country, and it helps spread some of this information because there is such a terrible news blackout of many of the things that I talk about with you each week. And you can call in again on that program, and there may be many things that I won't have time to bring up that you might remind the listeners or have ideas of your own to inform them about these subjects. The Monterey Convention Center in town here on January the 27th, the evening of the 27th, is having a play. They're having a play called Kennedy Lives, and it will be touring around the country, and the actor has studied John Kennedy's speeches for the last 13 years. They're going to be taking a videotape of that play to play over in Europe. And as I say, he'll be touring around the country with this. And I will be awarding students. They're having a contest for students before the play, the week before, on what John Kennedy meant to America or meant to them. Many of these students, of course, were babies when John Kennedy was assassinated. But he's relegated to history like President Truman or President Roosevelt or Abraham Lincoln. And they're writing essays, and I will be there in the evening of the 27th, hurry down from Berkeley and do that presentation. And also, KGO is a station that has blacklisted a lot of my material, the daytime shows. Bob Trevor is pretty loyal. I was on the program. I called him up last night about some material. And I will be on there February the 3rd, that Saturday, from 10 to 12 p.m. So that's three talk shows for the people in the California area, and the Bob Tribber, of course, goes up to Seattle and Oregon. For those of you that have the tapes up there and in Vancouver, you can listen to it in the evening. You get the tapes up there, and you can disseminate this information if people want to hear these shows. You can call in and ask questions. And then afterwards, it's important to write to the managers of KGO and KPFA and KXRX, and I'll give you their addresses and tell them that you appreciate this kind of information going over AM and FM radio stations, both of them, and that they continue to do that. These people are good sources of getting the material out. They're interested, they're alive, they're into the subjects, and we have to encourage them and thank them for using the airwaves and, of course, keep using that media to reach as many people as we can, as often as we can. And, of course, that's why it takes your support. And then, again, in the East, those of you that take the tapes have notified other radio stations who've called me for interviews. And we get more information out through these radio talk shows. Sometimes they're 2 and 3 hours at a time, coming from New York, Boston, Miami, Atlanta, Georgia. I'm doing a lot of radio shows, and a lot of it is caused by people taking the tapes and calling these various people and asking for Mae Brussel to be on and sending them samples of the tapes. So let's keep that up and keep spreading the information and getting it out to more states and more people while we still can. Just speaking about one person's letter or two people writing a letter, getting a woman her program back, I have an example here. On June 30th, 1978, on our tape 322, side one, I mentioned that a radio station in Monterey, California, was sold to a man named James E. Brown, who has what he calls a Christian awareness broadcasting system. And he bought a station here called K-Wave, K-W-A-V. And the Monterey Herald had an article that he would exclude all Jews from airtime, that the radio station was only supposed to be used for Christians, and no Jews could use his radio station. And one man, one single man in this community, a Mr. Sherman, who owns a music store called the Record Cove, headed a committee and got a few other people behind him and was very instrumental in stopping the sale of that radio station. And Mr. James Brown has backed out from buying K-Wave, and it's now in the hands of the original owners, and it will not be a Christian radio station. And that is the way to fight these things as they come up one by one, and don't wait for somebody else to do it. Mr. Sherman didn't wait. He had no support from the local rabbi, from the Jewish community at large. They sat back, but as an individual, he fought that. And just this last week, it was announced that the Christian station would not be bought. And again, this is the effort of a single person. There's some of you writing letters to the editor, calling the talk shows. Some of you are just taking the tapes and listening and putting them on your shelves. The best thing to do, if you really care, is to extend yourself and write letters to the stations, write letters to the editor, call the talk shows, send copies of tapes to your friends. There's no copyright on them, and keep the information going and fight for what you believe in, like Mr. Sherman did here at K-Wave. United Press International had an article January the 10th, 1979. Fort Worth, Texas, a British lawyer and author, Michael Eddowes, filed a petition in Tarrant County District Court in Texas, Court 141, to exhume the body of Lee Harvey Oswald that is buried in Fort Worth's Rose Hill Cemetery. Michael Eddowes wrote two books on the John Kennedy assassination, and he alleges that the person that came back to the United States was a Russian agent, that it was not Lee Harvey Oswald, the one that was in the Marines who went to the Soviet Union, that there was a lookalike that was substituted in Oswald's place. He's named as respondents in the petition at Tarrant County District Attorney Tim Curry and County Medical Examiner Felix Gwotz. I suppose that's the way you pronounce it. I'll give you the spelling in the sheet that accompanies this tape. The petition will be heard in Tarrant County District Court 141. It will not appear on the docket before April. Therefore, we have time in the months of February and March to pursue this, to write to public officials and ask that that body be exhumed. Michael Eddowes has a different reason than I have for exhuming the body of Lee Harvey Oswald. I want to know if that is in fact the double Lee Harvey Oswald, and if Oswald was substituted after the interview with Jack Ruby in the press. It was early Saturday morning, late Friday night, the week of November 22nd, 23rd, 1963. Those of you who have my earlier tape, number 341, July 28th, 1978, side two, I talked about the necessity to exhume the body of Lee Harvey Oswald and how I knew the House Select Committee would ignore this kind of important evidence, and gave you on that sheet, if you have it accompanying the tapes, the minutes of the meeting of the Warren Commission in January 1964. The various members were meeting and ordered the cremation of the body that was supposed to be Lee Harvey Oswald. It was Chief Justice Earl Warren, as I put on the sheet, who said it has been suggested that they exhume him and cremate him. The question might arise before this thing, and he doesn't say what that thing was. As to something on that body, I don't know what it is. It might be the course of the bullet, and it might be something else. And, of course, I wanted this body exhumed. I've wanted it exhumed ever since I had the minutes of the Warren Commission meetings, which David Lifton had published. Very important to have the book, the document addendum to the Warren Report, and also to dig up this body. In July of 78, the CIA planted a story that they tried to have the body exhumed, that there was going to be some speculation about exhuming the body of Lee Harvey Oswald, but that the CIA tried to have it exhumed, and then it was stopped. That is not true, and I said that was a planted story, that the CIA attorneys have suppressed all information about the fact that there were orders to cremate this body and destroy it, even before the Warren Commission called their first witness. They had 552 witnesses, and before a single witness was called to find out who killed John Kennedy or why Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, they were going to destroy the body of Lee Harvey Oswald. I did talk about that in July of this year, in July 28, 1978. So we must follow up on the efforts. This is a story now about a filing of an attorney to bring up that body and see if it is, in fact, Lee Harvey Oswald, and see who is in that coffin. That's important for me, for my work, because if that is not Lee Harvey Oswald, then I know where he went and how he got out of Texas and the route that he went away. And then also it would be mandatory then to go a little farther over to Houston, Texas, where there's an unmarked grave under acres of grass, and pull out that body that's supposed to be Howard Hughes, and you'll find out that it's Vance Cooper. And then we'll really know who's running the government and who's pulling the wool over our eyes. Jack Anderson, of course, ignored the entire House Select Committee for 2 years, but when the report came in, he had an article this week called Final Report, in which he says the House Assassination Committee will conclude that organized crime had the motive, means, and opportunity to kill President Kennedy. I talked about that last week, that you got the diagram. That's where the committee and the critics leave off from point five down, blame the anti-Castro Cubans and break organized crime. Not break it, but cut your losses at dead members of organized crime such as Sam Giancana and John Roselli. Jack Anderson had said that the committee investigators found no evidence of a top-level mob plan to kill Kennedy, but the fact that Jack Ruby executed Lee Harvey Oswald is a standard way of silencing a man who would talk. That's Jack Anderson as of January the 7th, 1978. He says there's possible links the committee have found of Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby to organized crime. And as I've stressed before, on that scale, it goes much, much higher. And Jack Anderson comes in to wipe up the loose ends and reiterate the possible mob killing of Jack Ruby of Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, if it's that low-level organized crime wiping out of Lee Harvey Oswald the way the syndicate and mob does, he still can't explain, Jack Anderson, then why the Dallas Police Department would hide members of organized crime and be the subject of books and criticisms and investigations or why the Dallas Police Department would take suspects photographed leaving Dealey Plaza and never list them or book them or fingerprint them, or why Earl Warren and Alan Dulles and John J. McCloy would cover up for such characters that Anderson named, such as Angelo Bruno from Philadelphia or Santos Traficano or Carlos Marcella. Why would the Warren Commission lock up for 75 years information about Ruth and Michael Payne and Oswald's connections to the U-2 flight? Why would they lock up the Nazi connections to the assassination? Why would they destroy Kennedy's car or his brains or John Connally's clothing and lampposts and street signs and so forth? Would the Warren Commission and the Dallas Police and the FBI do all that for Angelo Bruno and Carlos Marcello, who had been deported once already, or Santos Traficana? They can kill these men so fast. Why would they do all that to cover up for organized crime? And why would Henry Luce buy up the Abraham Zapruder frames and lock them up, rearrange the sequence, alter the pictures, paint in a scope, and then erase the scope? That's the same Henry Luce who lauded Adolf Hitler and Mussolini, who put them on the cover of his magazines over and over again as the great saviors of the world. Why would he cover organized crime? And why would the State Department give Lee Harvey Oswald a passport within 24 hours in the summer of 63 after he already had defected to the Soviet Union, told them he was giving them radar secrets of our Marines in the Pacific Ocean, and give away codes and information, and then the State Department sent him money to come home? Why would they do all that? I think that the simplistic attitude of people like Jack Anderson is so dangerous because it doesn't cover the areas. Why would Robert Mayhew of the Howard Hughes Organization, who worked with the CIA and the FBI, team up in 1960, just the time that John Kennedy got the nomination to become president? Why would he team up with organized crime and make that marriage, be the person who blends together the very people that are suspect in this case now? How can Anderson leave Hughes out? Howard Hughes in 1962 said, in quotes, "The Kennedy brothers are a relentless thorn in my side," and Robert Mayhew was working with Howard Hughes through this period up through 1966, through the assassination period of John Kennedy, and certainly setting this framework for Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy. And why would they leave out the connections of Clay Shaw from the International Trademark New Orleans with these same mob kings, Carlos Marcello and David Ferry? Clay Shaw knew these people. Why is it that Jack Anderson wants to pin this on the mob? The answer, of course, is that that is the level of cover-up, what I gave you last week, up to number five. And then Nicholas Harrock of the New York Times, same newspaper that published the Warren Report, the paperback edition, he had a little article, quite a large article, tracing any Kennedy connections, or is tracing any Kennedy conspirator is given little chance by officials. This is the New York Times. He says the chance of identifying and prosecuting any conspirators in the murder of President Kennedy 15 years ago appears remote. Why is it so remote? Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission. Gerald Ford presented that phony, planted, forged Lee Harvey Oswald diary and leaked it to Life magazine. He wrote a book based on false information and lies about Lee Harvey Oswald. He knew, and I have the exact documents to prove, that Lee Harvey Oswald worked for both the FBI and the CIA. A crime of cover-up is also part of the charge of conspiracy. Why does Harrock say that you can't identify or prosecute conspirators? Richard Nixon had to lose the presidency, which is the highest office in this land, or one of the highest, I suppose, because of cover-up. Why does Gerald Ford become president, and why does he want to be a candidate again? Call in Marina Oswald and ask her about that planted rifle we talked about last week, or perjury about the reception of the rifle, or forging the name of Lee Harvey Oswald. I think perjury is still a crime, and forging is a crime. And if Lee Harvey Oswald didn't order that rifle, and if she wrote the name, I think she could be called. He went on to say the committee refused to rule out that individuals in the anti-caster group or individual criminals had done the killing. This is Nicholas Herrock in the New York Times saying the committee refused to rule out that individuals from crime or individual criminals of the anti-Castro ilk had done the killing. They didn't rule out individuals. That's true. They left that open. The report will say individuals. But what about the connecting links of Robert Mayhew? He made those connections of the mob to the anti-Castro Cubans. What about E. Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis? Hunt had offices with Buckley and the CIA in Mexico that were a source of funding of Watergate and assassination teams. And again, the forged diary of Lee Harvey Oswald that Gerald Ford leaked to Life magazine. Did E. Howard Hunt write it? He could be prosecuted. Why was Richard Nixon going to give him this money at the time of Watergate? What was so important? And what about the assassination plans that Frank Sturgis could be a part of with the anti-Castro Cubans? There was definitely a conspiracy plan to kill John Kennedy in Miami. Why not call in these people? You see, the New York Times is saying that individuals were involved and that the House Select Committee has singled out possible individuals without connections higher up that you can't find prosecute any longer anyone involved. I don't agree at all. Nicholas Katzenbach, the attorney for IBM, was called before the House Select Committee. He was a deputy attorney general in 64. He was the man they selected to order the cremation of the body of Lee Harvey Oswald. If we dig up that body and we find out that Nicholas Katzenbach was responsible for ordering it to be cremated, just taking orders like a good German, I suppose. But even then, it doesn't mean that we can't prosecute these people. Just because they weren't holding the gun isn't important. These are still crimes. This is a crime of cover-up to order the cremation of a man and possibly bury his double. And then they could call in the executives from Ford Motor Company and also from either the Secret Service or the FBI or the Pentagon, because the question is, who ordered the car to go to Michigan? We still don't know whether the Secret Service sent it there, whether Army Intelligence sent it there, or the FBI. But a man has a name. A man has to have a name and a document at 48 hours after Kennedy was killed that the car was shipped away without being examined for a murder. Now, we can find out who that man is. These are things the House Select Committee didn't do, but as long as they're coming up with an assassination conspiracy that involves organized crime and the anti-Castro Cubans, you can't separate those individuals from the Galen operation, Hitler's Eastern Intelligence, a Nazi intelligence, or American intelligence. Therefore, you go one step further. Now that we know they were involved, how did they get involved, and who allowed the evidence to be destroyed? We can go to the National Archives, and the House Select Committee didn't ask how the JFK brains disappeared. There must be a chain of command. You just can't go to the archives and ask for a bottle of brains and get rid of them. Somebody ordered the car, somebody ordered the brains to be disappeared, and then get the name of the agent who went to the home of Representative Henry Gonzalez in Washington, D.C., and picked up some paper bags with clothing, John Connally's shirt and his trousers and his coat. That agent from the Secret Service, he has a name, John Doe or Mr. ABC or whatever. Give him any name, like the Alphabet Bomber in L.A. I mean, just the man has to have a name. He was sent to the home apartment of a congressman from Texas living in Washington, D.C., and went to a dry cleaner. Was it a CIA dry cleaner? Was it an FBI dry cleaner or the Secret Service or his own? But he has to have a name. He checked in. He just picked it up, took it, because the clothing were returned to the FBI, only dry clean. Now, they have to know who turned them in. When you get evidence like that, there's a name attached to it, and that would show entry or exit bullets. And it's time we find out who picked up the clothing and who had it dry cleaned and who delivered it. You see, Nicholas Herrock in the New York Times can say, we'll never know these things, but we will know them because these people are alive. It may be 15 years later, but they're all alive. Then go to Mullen Associates, a public relations firm. It has been a front for the Howard Hughes organization, the killer team, and for E. Howard Hunt and the Buckley Combine with their connections to Douglas Caddy. And they had a CIA front called the Free Cuban Committee down New Orleans that was funded by the Defense Department and the CIA. And one of the people, the financial supporters of the committee, was a man named Mr. William Riley. And Riley Coffee Company is where Lee Harvey Oswald picked up his money while he was in New Orleans working with Mr. Bannister, Guy Bannister, and David Ferry, and Clay Shaw, all of the CIA and FBI. And his paycheck came from Mr. William Riley, even though he didn't go to the coffee company in the daytime at all, but it was a conduit of money. Mr. William Riley, for all I know, isn't dead. It may be 15 years later, but find out about his Free Cuban Committee. And his connections were very strong to Sergio Acacia Smith and David Ferry and Gordon Novell. Now, Ferry's dead, but Smith is alive. And Novell is alive, and Novell was even considered as a director of the CIA not too long ago. He was an important man with the CIA continuously. So the story that it's 15 years later and it's remote that there can be prosecutions is just ridiculous. We could call in these people and get a little testimony out of them. He said, Nicholas Horrock said, many of the key people are dead or have disappeared. There are many of them alive, and just as I listed for you on a tape a while back, all the important witnesses that had been murdered since the assassination of John Kennedy, perhaps we should do one cassette one day on all the witnesses who are alive, who could be prosecuted and accounted for, just like the Watergate people went to jail, some of them John Ehrlichman and John Robert Haldeman and Charles Colson, there are a bunch of them. Donald Segretti, they went to John Mitchell, the golf-playing country club jails, but they went to jail, and some of them did lose their law degree and lost some of their respectability, and they were all part of the crime of cover-up. They were never charged with killing J. Edgar Hoover or Mary Jo Kopechne or Robert Kennedy or shooting George Wallace or planning riots that could have killed people in Miami or even planning to kill Richard Nixon in 1972. They all went to jail for cover-up, the crime of cover-up. So the idea that you can't prosecute these people because it's 15 years later is just a lot of bull. Now, you remember the, I think it was a Senator Church Committee, it came out that 400 persons from the news media were involved with the Central Intelligence Agency, and we've never been able to get the names of these people, but you get a pretty good idea out of the junky columns they put out. One just came out yesterday by James Kilpatrick. It's about the House Select Committee called $5 Million Badly Spent. And he said it seems impossible for anybody to convert the dramatic event of the 20th century, the killing of John Kennedy, into an exercise in boredom. But the House Select Committee did it. And he's got a cartoon in his article of a little garbage can, and there's a dollar sign, and bags of money are being thrown in the garbage can, and he said it was clear then, it is clear now. Lee Harvey Oswald killed the president, and 2 years of labor have produced one positive conclusion. The Secret Service, the FBI, the CIA were not involved in the assassination of John Kennedy. Well, it'd be nice to show Jack Anderson and Nicholas Horrock and James Kilpatrick and the 400 other lying bastard CIA news people that are planted all over the country that they're wrong. And one way to do it is to support Michael Eddowes' plan to exhume that body and find out if that was not Lee Harvey Oswald, then every single one of these reporters should also be prosecuted for cover-up, because we can trace their links to the Central Intelligence Agency. They are part of disinformation. They're part of continuous cover-up of getting columns syndicated all over the United States and every newspaper with their rotten talk and lies and cartoons. And I think there is much a part of the problem. If the CIA was involved in covering up the assassination of John Kennedy or in getting Lee Harvey Oswald out of the country, if there was a double, and if the CIA has 400 newsmen that are writing this kind of garbage, then the newsmen should be accountable and the list should be given of those people so we know who we're reading and why they're writing this kind of trash all the time. Our last comments on the JFK investigation for this week come from the Washington Post, January the 3rd, this past week. It says, the Justice Department will not act on finding on JFK findings for now. Translated for now probably means forever. It said the Justice Department indicated yesterday it will take no immediate action into investigating any further the murder of John Kennedy. Of course, this is written by George Lardner Jr., who's a continuous cover-up bastard, too. He says in his article that in Gainesville, Florida, a former counsel for the House Committee, Kenneth Bruton, suggests that medical evidence might support the conspiracy theory. He said Kennedy's autopsy showed a hematoma or blood clot in the upper back beneath the shoulder blade, and he was quoted by the UPI as saying the cause of the clot was never revealed. What if the clot happens to be a bullet, and that's why we can't ever see the autopsy x-rays, but we can only see drawings of it because, for one thing, the original FBI autopsy said a bullet went in the back finger length and didn't go through the throat or chest. And that's why it's important to find out about the clothing of John Connolly and the car that was destroyed, that ripped out the seats but was never examined properly, the metal part in Michigan, and all that other evidence that is missing that would show more than one assassin, because this is not a mafia hit team. This is a cover-up from the Pentagon, as I say, from the historian on down, the highest level of conspiracy. And the Justice Department doesn't want to touch it or go into it, but now we find out that there was a blood clot somewhere in a shoulder blade, and goodness knows what else there is. Every day a little more leaks out, and he's suggesting that this part of the shoulder blade had never been revealed. On the other side of this tape now, we'll go into Jonestown some more.